Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading, I Get Paid to Answer Phone Calls All Day, But I'm Only Allowed to Listen. This is by Mythic Melon from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. We've all heard of odd jobs before. Quirky social media gigs, requests from strangers on the internet, sometimes legit, mostly illegal. I want to warn you about my latest venture. The premise is simple, but confusing. You're paid to answer calls, but you can only listen. If you talk back, if you say anything at all, you're done. Curious? So was I. But before I jump in, I want to set the scene for you. There's a lot of ground to cover, but I promise it'll be worth the wait. Let's start with the call center. There's a certain uneasiness in the building. It's not the lights or the computers or the AC rumbling through the white paneled ceiling. It's deeper than that. A quiet, unnerving buzz. The longer you are here, the easier it gets, but the feeling never quite goes away. It just gets buried deeper and deeper into the steel case you call your mind. You'd be surprised how many people there are in this office. It's quiet, but it isn't silent. Never silent. If you sit still long enough, if you really listen, you can hear them. The voices, the steady rhythm of desperation. Cries, pleas, whispers, screams. They're not loud. Not loud enough to disturb anyone. Just soft enough to make your skin crawl, like a bad feeling you can't place. They're not coming from the workers. They're pouring out of the phones. The never-ending sea of desperate callers ringing in day after day. Every call is different. Every voice is different. But the words, the stories, always the same. "Please," they say. "I don't know where I am. Something is outside the door. I need help." But no one responds. No one ever does. Two cubes down, Martha, that's what I call her, is filling out a crossword. She taps her acrylic nails against her desk like she's typing away at an invisible keyboard. Then there is Debbie. Again, not her name, but she seems like a Debbie. She is tall, brunette, and eating the same cheap parfait she brings in every day. I think it's strawberry flavored. Nobody talks here, not out loud, not unless they still want to work here. We don't wear name tags. We don't introduce ourselves. We don't even wear our own faces. Everyone's assigned a mask. Not the sanitary kind. Not the Halloween kind either. They're corporate, sleek, smooth, almost artistic. I would describe it as a masquerade-style mask without the usual glitter and tassels. They start just below the forehead and stop just above the mouth. Let's say it's part of the experiment. What experiment? Nobody really knows. That's kind of the whole point. We're not here to understand. We're here to follow instructions. Answer the call. Don't say anything. Let them speak. Let them scream. Let them beg. Just sit there with the phone pressed to your ear and listen until the line goes dead. That's it. That's the job. It seems cheap. Gimmicky almost. Like we're part of the latest reality TV series where cameramen are hiding in the bushes with ulterior motives. I thought the same at first, but if there is something that doesn't lie, it's money, and lots of it. That's why I'm here. I'm Ariana, 19 years old, college dropout. A few semesters in, then I quit. Way too much debt, too little hope, credit cards stacked like a tower ready to fall. I spent weeks scouring every corner of the internet for something, anything that could get me back on my feet, even if just for a while. That's when Mabel introduced me to her profession. Mabel was unique. Always dressed sharp, nice car, good career, Chanel bag casually tossed over her shoulder. A very independent woman. She lived in the city, paid her own bills, and did whatever the hell she wanted to. She was fun, serious, and motivating all at once. We have been friends for a while now, but she always keeps me at arm's length. Sure, we would go out and have a nice time together. Bond over past relationships and mutual interests, but there was something mysterious about her. She never really talked about her work. I assumed it was drugs or some kind of shady side hustle. It wasn't like her to keep secrets. But when she saw how down on my luck I was, she took pity. Handed me a business card. and then just as quickly told me she never gave me that card. If anyone asks you, I didn't give you that card. You don't know Mabel, and Mabel don't know you, she said sharply. Apparently that was against the company's rules. Nobody can know anyone else who works there. I was confused, but curious. I called the number. A voice answered, cold, mysterious. They asked me two questions. Do you break under pressure? Do you know anyone else who works here? I said no and no. That was it. No background check, no references. Didn't even ask to see the resume I carefully prepared for the occasion. They gave me an address and a time. Simple as that. The onboarding was just as strange as everything else. You'd think I was signing up for some military program or a secret government project. Everyone was tight-lipped. No smiling, no small talk. The rules were simple and unsettling. 1. Arrive at the building exactly when your shift starts. Not a minute early. Not a minute late. 2. Keep your mask on the entire time. No exceptions. 3. Don't identify yourself. Don't try to identify anyone else. 4. Do not respond or speak to the caller on the other end of the line. It felt odd, to say the least. But I kept telling myself it was just one big experiment. They're paying for data, not for us to help anyone. We're not really answering calls. We're the product, being fed to someone or something higher up the chain. That is what the assessors say, at least. Assessors are basically glorified managers, people with a flashy degree in people skills that tell you the voices aren't real, that the people on the other end aren't people at all. They're artificial, synthetic, part of the test and nothing more. Simulations, they say. You're not hurting anyone. It's about resilience, exposure therapy, mental strength. Sure, buddy. I don't know what they are. I refuse to believe they are people. It wouldn't make sense. But they don't act like simulations either. They don't sound fake. They sob, they stutter, they beg for their kids. They talk about the thing outside the closet or the eyes under the bed or monster outside their window. You sit there and you listen. You grip your pen tighter and tighter until the call drops out or the screaming stops or there's that awful sudden silence like something just grabbed the person out of existence. Then you breathe. You clear your throat. And the phone rings again. You pick up. I've been here 8 months now. Not long, but long enough to know the rhythm. This job isn't about smarts or motivation. It's about routine, muscle memory. You have to build your own little rhythm. Listening to terror all day eats at you. Breaks you down slowly. I've seen it happen. New masks come in wide-eyed and curious. And by month two, their breaking rules are just gone. My routine is pretty straightforward at this point. I get in at 6:45 a.m., sharp. Same elevator, same gray carpet, same cubicle by the fire exit. I don't speak to anyone. It's safer that way. Chatter is dangerous for me and for whoever's already picking up calls. At 7 a.m., my phone activates. The light goes on. Not a ring. Never a ring. Just the light. Blue means wait. Red means answer. And when it's red, you answer. You don't greet them. You don't ask questions. You just listen. And what you hear? Well, they're always running, always hiding, always being chased by something they can't quite describe. A little boy whispering, saying something is scratching at his door. His mom won't wake up. A woman panting, saying she's in the stairwell. Something is coming up behind her fast, and the police aren't answering her calls anymore. A man with a crushed voice, locked in a closet. He mutters that he hears footsteps pacing back and forth right outside, stopping every time he breathes. Different voices, same panic. Some of them say they're in a hallway, or a small bedroom, or under a sink. Sometimes they describe this building, the call center. They'll mention glass double doors, or the color of the carpet, or the smell of coffee from a nearby break room. Sometimes they describe the workers. You have a mask, they'll say. Black gloves, I know you. You can help me. Then they scream. We're not supposed to react. Not even a twitch. I've gotten pretty good at it. Neutral face, steady hands. A woman once asked me to sing to her while something chewed its way through a front door. I didn't, but I wanted to. It sticks to you, even after the call ends. Especially then. We all handle it differently. food, puzzles, fidgeting, anything to let out the tension. To cope, I sketch what they describe, not out of interest or enjoyment, just release. Macabre, maybe, but it makes the images leave my head a little faster. Dark figures, tall shadows, doorways broken and bloody, a lot of staircases. And then, just when I start to forget, the light turns red again. The first few days were the hardest, but then my first check came in. After just 1 month on the job, I paid off my student loans. That crushing weight finally lifted. Felt like I could breathe again. A month later, I bought my first car, used but reliable. Then I paid off my credit card debt. For the first time in years, the numbers in my bank account weren't a burden I needed to figure out. Now, I live in a multi-bedroom loft right in the city. The kind of place with exposed brick walls and big windows that let in way too much sunlight. I'm driving the car I used to drool over in magazines, the one I thought I'd never afford. The money washes away the guilt at this point. Synthetic, manufactured guilt, like a fresh coat of paint covering the grime beneath. Except the grime is just as processed as the paint at this point. Maybe that was the point all along. Just an expensive, extravagant experiment. A cold corporate bet that people will do almost anything for the right amount of cash, even if it means listening to fake snuff calls for hours on end. It's what I told myself. The calls were just noise. Background static to the paycheck. Until I heard something I never expected. It was a Tuesday afternoon. I was halfway through my shift, eyes drifting between the crossword puzzle I had started yesterday and the dull glow of my screen. I was a little hungover, my head still fuzzy from last night's bad decisions. Maybe that's why I was caught so off guard. Maybe that is why I made this horrible mistake. The phone turned red. I picked up instinctively, my eyes still fixed on the crossword puzzle. "Hello? Is anyone there? I need help." The voice was faint but unmistakable. It was her, Mabel. And for a split second, I forgot where I was. I thought maybe I'd picked up my personal phone by mistake. My heart started to hammer. "Mabel?" I whispered before I could stop myself. The room was quiet. Not just the usual quiet of the call center, but something heavier, thicker, like the room was holding its breath. I felt eyes on me. Dozens of masked faces turned in my direction, watching, waiting. I felt my face go red as hot embarrassment washed over me. I ducked my head below my cubicle wall, phone still pressed to my ear. Damn. I was done. Then Mabel spoke again. "Wait, Ariana?" I wanted to hang up, but something stopped me. I just didn't understand. Why was Mabel on the line? I've heard hundreds of simulated voices plead and beg for a response. I never imagined it could sound like someone you know. I was already reaching to hang up, but she said something strange. Something unexpected. "Oh, no, she stammered, voice trembling with confusion. A cold shiver crawled down my spine. This wasn't the Mabel I knew. Then she started laughing. Not the light, friendly laugh I remembered. A manic, a broken laugh. It didn't stop. I slammed the phone down. I spun around, heart racing, and there she was. A member of HR, standing at just the edge of my cubicle, black mask, notepad in hand, expression unreadable. She motioned for me to follow. No words, just a slow, deliberate walk toward her office. I sat down in the stiff plastic chair across from her desk, my mind still reeling. The call played on a loop in my head, the voice, the laugh, the way it sounded exactly like Mabel. I couldn't stop shaking. "You broke the rules, yes?" she asked flatly, scribbling in her notepad without looking up. "Yes, but you understand that means you are terminated from the call center, correct?" She cut me off with such finality, like it was scripted, like she was reciting lines from a procedure manual. "I recognized her," I said. "The voice. I thought I picked up my own phone by accident. I thought maybe it wasn't even..." That made her pause. She looked up for the first time. Her eyes were sharp behind the mask. Almost disappointed. Or was it fear? "You thought what?" "It sounded like someone I knew, a friend of mine." She didn't write anything down, just stared at me. "When you first applied to this job, you answered two questions. Do you remember them?" I hesitated. My stomach turned. They asked if I was good under pressure and if I knew anyone who worked here. And how did you answer? No, I said no to both. She stared a moment longer, then slowly ripped a sheet of paper from her pad and slid it across the desk. You are hereby terminated from this experiment. You can collect your final paycheck at the location printed on this slip. You've also been granted a severance equivalent to 1 month's salary. I blinked at her. Wait, that's all? She didn't respond. She just went back to typing, like I wasn't there anymore. No explanation, no follow-up about the call, no mention of what I heard, just a polite termination and a severance bonus. I grabbed the paper without reading it and stormed out, past the rows of silent, masked employees, past the flickering overhead lights, and out into the daylight. I was halfway to my car when I realized I hadn't even removed my mask. I didn't look back. I felt everything over the next few days. Sadness, anger, confusion. Like my body kept going through the motions, but my mind was stuck on a loop. That voice on the other end of the call, the thing that sounded like Mabel, I didn't know what I was supposed to believe anymore. On the second day, I caved and called her. Straight to voicemail. That was weird. We were supposed to hang out next weekend. Maybe grab drinks and vent about the call center. Mabel never ghosted me. Not even when she was sick or pissed or going through it. Something was off. By the third day, I decided I needed to get out of the house. Clear my head. The address they gave me for my severance package wasn't far, so I drove out. It led me to a hotel. One of those upscale downtown places with giant flower arrangements and staff that wore gloves. I didn't even see a front desk. Just a wall of private mailboxes near the back. The code they gave me worked. The lock clicked open and inside was a check, neatly folded like it had just been printed. I left and crossed the street of the parking garage where I'd left my car. As I reached the elevator, I paused. There was someone standing on the sidewalk a little ways down, right outside the garage entrance. Big blonde hair, fur coat, tall boots. Mabel? I stepped forward without thinking, just a few feet, enough to get a better look, and that's when I saw it wasn't her. Not really. The thing looked like Mabel if she'd been made from melting wax. Too tall, limping slightly, her skin hung off her face in folds, sagging like old leather. Her mouth was slack. Her eyes. God, her eyes. Two hollow pits, ringed with tiny, sharp teeth. Her hands were worse. Loose skin, twisted fingers, bent at angles that didn't make sense. And yet people kept walking past her like she wasn't there. They moved around her, avoided bumping into her like she had a presence. She took up space, but no one looked. Not directly. They didn't see her. Not really. If they did, they would have been as terrified as I was. The elevator behind me dinged and the doors opened. I ran inside, slammed the closed door button with shaking fingers. As the door slid shut, I heard footsteps on the concrete. Slow, deliberate, getting closer. Too close. I didn't look. I didn't want to see her again. The elevator dropped me off a few floors up. I got in my car and drove. Fast, too fast. Every red light felt like a trap. Every time I glanced out my window, I expected to see her there on the sidewalk, moving along in slow, rhythmic motion like a snail wearing human skin. I called a few friends on the way home, just to hear voices. I didn't tell them what I saw. Didn't want to sound insane, but I felt insane. All those desperate calls I've been ignoring, month after month of people screaming and crying and begging, and now it's like the floodgates have opened. Everything's pouring in at once. Maybe I was having a breakdown. That's what I kept telling myself. Listening to pain and anguish every day will do that to you. I just needed rest, some air, maybe a little trip. I had money now, enough to disappear for a few days, clear my head. And if I still didn't feel right afterward, I'd find a therapist. God knows I'd probably needed one anyway. I took a detour from my apartment elevator to stroll through the lobby. I wanted to grab a few snacks from the shop beside the front desk before settling in for the night. I needed a bottle or two of something strong to drown out the sadness from my termination from the call center. I was crossing the front desk when I caught sight of something in the corner of my eye. I turned, and there it was again. Mabel, walking towards me from the lobby entrance. The sight gave me chills, but that feeling passed quickly. I felt steadier after the drive. more level-headed. I wasn't afraid. I was annoyed. This wasn't real. It had to be some elaborate prank or a figment of my imagination. Either way, it couldn't hurt me. I just needed to prove it to myself. I looked around. Everyone else was just walking past. I held my hands out desperate. Really? Nobody else seeing this? Took a few deep breaths and it started toward it. Hey, sir, why are you following me? I called out. The thing didn't say anything, just kept lurching forward. I stopped a few feet in front of it. The smell hit me first, sour and rotten. I winced at the sight of the bloated figure writhing and convulsing under its cheap Mabel disguise. Did you hear me? This isn't funny, creep. I'm going to get security. Chomp. A mouth. It tore open from the thing's stomach and bit off the finger I was waving at its chest. Just like that. Gone. I staggered back, screaming, clutching the bloody stump where my finger used to be. It kept limping forward. I screamed louder, begging for help. No one looked. No one even paused. I turned and bolted toward the stairs, blood dripping behind me. I was halfway up when I heard the stairway entrance slam open. It was coming. I reached my floor and sprinted down the hall, fumbled my key out of my purse with trembling, bloody hands, got the door open, locked it behind me. I backed away until my spine hit the wall on the other end of the apartment. I pulled my phone out and started dialing 911 with my good hand. Ringtone, then silence. No connection? I checked my service. Full bars. This didn't make any sense. I called friends, family, my hairstylist. Nothing. No ringtone. Just silence. I cursed and rushed to the people. There's nothing out there. Not yet. Just a wide, empty hallway. Blood was getting everywhere. I could feel my heartbeat in my hand from all the pain and swelling. I stumbled into my bedroom, wrapped my finger to stop the bleeding, and popped a few painkillers. Once that was taken care of, I sat at my desk and opened my laptop. Tried to get online, email, social media, anything. Blank screen and no connection. I sat down and cried. I didn't understand what was happening. Something was wrong. Not just with that thing in the hallway, not just with me. Reality itself was broken. No one could hear me. No one could reach me. No one cared. I was isolated, trapped. Food for something that wore my friend's skin. Maybe that was all that was left of her. Then it was here. I heard a few limping footsteps outside the door. The light underneath the front door was stifled by something large standing outside it. I held my breath, waiting, but nothing happened. It just sat there, doing nothing. I grabbed a knife and waited. It was bound to come in at some point, but it didn't. Hours passed. It was well into the night, and the shadow was still there. It didn't make sense. I fumbled with my phone. I needed to get in contact with someone. I knew it was futile, but I had to try again. But then I heard something. Not from the phone, from the door. It was Mabel. Hey, Ariana, I'm here. I need your help. I didn't move. I didn't speak. It was her voice, but it sounded wet, guttural, like it was her whispering through the mouth of a corpse. Don't ignore me. Say something. Anything. I need to know you're okay. It was monotone. No concern in its voice. I carefully walked to my bedroom. Then a loud bang. Don't walk away from me, Ariana. Talk to me. The voice was deeper now. Less Mabel, more something else. I pushed my door closed with a soft click and covered my ears as a barrage of loud bangs broke out across the apartment. I heard them everywhere. My door, the ceiling above, the windows facing the city below. The sound passed after an hour. My body was so tired at this point. Partly exhaustion, partly the blood loss from my missing finger. I barricaded my door, clutched my phone, and rested my eyes in the empty bed. I slept maybe an hour or two before something woke me. I sprang up and looked toward the bedroom door. The shadow was under my bedroom door now. It had somehow gotten into my apartment. It was standing there the same way it had outside, but now it was here. I realized I couldn't escape this thing. Whatever it was going to get me. Slowly but surely, it had no issue entering my apartment. It would have no problem breaking into my room. Maybe it was toying with me. Maybe it enjoyed the chase. I felt panic wash over me. Leave me alone! I screamed. I heard a soft laugh break out just outside the door. I returned to my phone, started calling everyone in my contact list again. Silence every time. Like the world outside my apartment building just vanished. Then I realized something. I realized the silence didn't mean the calls were failing. They were going through every time. No ringing, no static, just quiet. Someone on the other end was always there, always listening. It was the call center. Every call I made was routed straight back to the center. I only figured it out because of a tiny, almost imperceptible sound, one you'd miss if you weren't desperate enough to listen for it. A spoon scraping the bottom of a plastic parfait cup. Debbie, from work. "Debbie?" I said into the phone. No response. Of course not. Debbie wasn't her name, just the one I gave her. None of us knew each other's names. That's how they designed it. Masks, code numbers, shift schedules that barely overlapped.
"Hey, I know you. Well, not know you, but we work together. Please, just say something. I think you can help me."
Still nothing. And that's when it hit me. They couldn't answer. Not ever. They couldn't. We don't speak. Not to them. It didn't matter what I said, how much I begged and cried. Could I really blame her? I ignored hundreds of calls just like this. And that is when I broke. I started laughing. Loud, cracked, borderline hysterical. The same kind of laugh I heard from Mabel the day she realized the truth. That she was calling the same people she sat next to every day. That none of us said a word. Not when it mattered. It was real. All of it. Real people. Real demons. God, those poor people. Men, women, and children. The poor children. The creature outside went quiet during my breakdown. Maybe it enjoyed my pain. Maybe it was hoping I'd walk out, still broken, right into its jaws. Once the laughter died and I steadied my breathing, I felt a strange mental clarity. Could have been the painkillers or sleep deprivation. Either way, I had an idea. If they respond, the creature moves on. That was my theory. I never got confirmation from Mabel, but she had tried it. She screamed into the phone until someone broke the rules and the thing left her alone. At least, that was the hope. I needed to get someone to answer, to break the rules, like Mabel did, like I did. I racked my brain for anything I knew about people I worked with. Something, anything that could crack their armor. Then it hit me. Martha. She was always working during my shift. The one with the crossword puzzles and clacking acrylics. The only reason she came to mind was because I knew something about her I shouldn't. We do our best to hide our identities, but every now and then something slips out. A phrase, the flash of a text on your personal phone, the hint of a tattoo. Her mistake was much more telling and easy to forget. One day I saw a brochure sticking out of her purse, assisted living facility. I recognized the name. My mom had looked into it for my grandfather once. Nice place, private rooms, big windows, expensive. Probably why Martha took the job. I grabbed the phone, started dialing. Random numbers, cold calling the center, over and over, same silent line, same hollow wait. I listened for her. I waited for the familiar tap of nails on the cheap plastic desk. Fast, plasticky little ticks. Call, hang up, call, hang up. Nothing. Was Martha even on rotation today? I started to feel hopeless. Outside the room, the door handle started to twitch. A soft rattle like someone trying to figure out the lock. It would be in here soon. Then I heard it. The clacking of nails. I prepped the script in my mind. I had one chance. "Hello?" I said in the calmest voice I could manage. No answer. I take another shaky breath before continuing. "I'm calling because your family member at Woodbrooks is in the middle of a situation here." I hoped this was the right angle. During my time working there, every call was frantic, desperate, just like me, but I couldn't show it. Not if I expected this to work. Nobody at the call center would expect something so calm and collected. The clacking stopped. I had her attention. Now I needed to drive it home. "Sorry to call this line. Someone at the call center said it was your work line? I just need to confirm some information. Let's start with your last name." I bit my tongue as the door began to unlock. Creaked open slowly. The barricade of furniture slid across the floor like I was a pile of empty boxes. I put my hand over my mouth to stifle a scream. What stood there wasn't wearing Mabel's skin anymore.
that was gone, sloughed off like wet clothing. What remained was something raw. A bundle of dark flesh, tentacles and mouths writhing in slow, deliberate motion, snapping, smacking, clicking wetly against each other. They turned toward me slowly. The bundle of wiry flesh writhed towards me in unison. I closed my eyes and tried to keep my voice level. "Ma'am, this is an emergency. If I don't get a directive right now, I will need to call 911. I felt warmth descending upon my face. 100 little mouths breathing on my skin in anticipation. Then, she spoke. "Is my mom okay?" she asked. The sound of her voice felt like a lifeline being caught in the middle of the ocean. I opened my eyes. To my surprise, the thing was gone. I caught just the tip of a black tendril vanishing around the corner toward my front door. I grabbed the phone again. "Listen, this isn't Woodbrook. I used to work with you. Something's coming for you. The call center, it intercepts your calls. You need to get someone to respond." The line went dead. I stood there, useless. I didn't even know her name and didn't know what she looked like, and yet I may have just sentenced her to a fate worse than what happened to me. Or Mabel. I felt sick. I didn't leave my apartment for weeks. I needed time to process everything. I'm in a better headspace now. You can thank a lot of expensive therapy for that. I got into this job for the money. I didn't care about the calls. I told myself they were fake, but that was a lie. The truth is, I was desperate. I don't know if I would have taken the job if I'd known what was really going on. Honestly, I probably still would have. That's what scares me. But now, I have a new purpose. A better one. I'm going to end the call center. I don't know how yet, but I'm working on it. I owned it to Mabel and Martha. I don't care if I go broke, if I lose everything. There are more important things than money in this life. And this place is going to learn that the hard way. Until then, you've been warned. Don't accept a job from the call center that ignores desperate people. Real people. Scared people being chased by a real threat. I managed to make it out. But most people won't be so lucky. Most people will be hiding in their homes, crying, pleading, begging a bunch of corporate morons in masks to save them from something truly evil. But if you already work in a place like the call center, it isn't too late. If you can help, help. Don't sit idly by and listen to injustice. Don't let the corporations tell you it's all synthetic garbage. Use your own judgment. Be kind. Be curious. You may just save someone's life. And that's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you thought in the comments below or wherever you are. Shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. And if you'd like to support the channel, there is a Ko-fi, Ko-fi, however you want to pronounce it, and a Patreon available, Ko-fi, Ko-fi, whatever, for one-off donations. Patreon for, you know, monthly support with early access and stuff like that. But I appreciate you being here. Beyond that, I just appreciate if you liked the video. Maybe leave a comment like, comment, subscribe, even if you can't do all of those things because you're on a podcast platform. Anyway, thank you for listening. I appreciate you for being here. Take care now. Bye-bye then.